members of the department, the state attorney's office, media, you are well, one, all welcome. Yesterday, we dealt with the Criminal Matters Amendment Bill and effected all the necessary amendments, and the department has gone back to bring the bill in line with those amendments. Now, before we put the bill for yourself for approval, can we just hear from the department that in doing the necessary changes, are there any challenges you met or some second thoughts that you had on anything?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Chair, we've done the A list and the B list for both bills. I understand that they have been duplicated. I think they are available and have been handed out. We didn't have any major problems, but I'm going to ask Dr. Huerta if the committee would like to. We could take you through the A list, what we've done, and just point out in the B list if the list is available, where those changes, you can see the changes in the context of the bill. Since we submitted the document to the Secretariat, we picked up a few small things that we would like to fix up that of a technical nature. Office of the Chief State Law Advisor assisted us and pointed us in the right direction, so we could take the committee with your permission on that basis.
If members are happy with that approach, can we allow Dr. Walter?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll use then the A list, and I'll speak also simultaneously to the B list. If we look at clause 1, what we're proposing now is on page 3, in line 5, after the word service, to just insert the comma. This is technical.
Which one are you dealing with?
Yes, criminal matters, not exclusive. The A list, yeah, the A list. You recall that the committee made a decision yesterday that we must rather say means a service and not includes a service, and then the rest of that sentence will then follow. So we just the amendments 1, 2, and 3 relate to that issue. Then on page 3, in line 40, after the device, as discussed yesterday, we just want to insert tampering, which then shall be construed accordingly. That was all in respect of clause 1 and Chairperson. If we look at clause 3, you will recall there was the decision that we may include a provision as a sub-clause to, under clause 3, dealing with the interpretation of the expression knowledge and suspicion. Now, because of that, we need just then to insert a sub-1 for the existing clause, and then also to insert the word all suspected in clause 3, where it says that, and who knows, or ought reasonably to have known, or then include or suspected. And then after that, Chairperson, the discussion was about what do you do if it's a corporate that is charged. In order to make provision for that, we must just insert with the penalty the following, or in the case of a corporate body as contemplated in Section 332 of the Criminal Procedure Act, a fine not exceeding 100 million, and you will see that now in the newly revised 3.1. Then, of course, the insertion of the new subsection, and Chairperson, that is where we have the second thought. On the A list, it shows on page 3, after line 30, to insert. All that we want to change that is not to say to insert, but to say to add the following subsection, just to make it clear that it's a subsection that we would like to include. In that subsection, Chair, we discussed yesterday the formulation that it will start off by saying, for the purposes of this act, a person, and then the interpretation follows. We had a re-look at this and we thought, because of the fact that the knowledge and the suspicion only appears in clause 3.1, it would in our mind be better not to say for the purposes of this act, but to say for the purposes of subsection 1, just to clarify that aspect. Then clause 6, Chairperson. We had a discussion about the fact that offence under POCA doesn't stand on its own, it's also always committed in relation to another offence. Hence you will find in under clause 6 that we want on page 4 in line 34 after the reference of the POCA Act to insert which relates to an offence. Just on the version of the aim list that the members have in front of them, the state law advisors pointed out to us that insertion which relates to an offence should be underlined, and it was the committee's approval we will just then make that correction as well. Then we discussed the whole issue of the need to insert a new clause, which will be clause 9 then, where we include the offence that we now create in clause 3 to include that in schedule 1 to the POCA for the reasons mentioned, and that is indicated then on page 3 of the A-list. There were no any other changes there, except what we can say in the D version, we realized the one that we sent to you, that in your possession now, Chairperson, does not have the year, the reference to the year of the POCA, and we thought it's important just to include that as well. Then if we can go on, we can go to the long cycle. Chair, we had a discussion on whether it's important or necessary to change the long cycle of the Act, and we think really it is necessary. We can't rely on that expression and other matters provided for. So we will have to change the long title as indicated on page 4, but here we've discovered that it's not the sixth line, it's the fifth line, because you don't count the line in which bill is written, and we were fortunate to be pointed, that thing was pointed out to us by the state law advisor. And then just after the word act, where we want to make the correction to the long title of the act, we must insert a semicolon.
Yes, I think, thank you, and that is everything that relates to the criminal procedure, criminal matters amendment bill as we discussed yesterday.
Honourable members, I think your instructions have been duly carried out, and anything that want to think out, are you all happy?
Yes, we are happy.
Okay, Honourable Mr. Bassett.
Sorry, I forgot to mention, we also adapted the memorandum on the objects in line with the amendments to the bill. I'm not too sure whether that has been distributed, but it is, Mr. Romano says that it has been distributed. But I would like to assure the committee that the small amendments that we had to bring about there give effect to the amendments in the law.
I hope that no one is worrying. Honourable Breckenbach, she is peaceful and someone seems to create a problem. Are you having a problem, Honourable Breckenbach?
Again, Mr. Chair, if I did, you would be the first to know. I'm having a discussion with the Honourable Masapa.
This is a friendly discussion. We are all happy. May I put the wrong bill to the House?
Honorable proposes, Honorable Brayton. And I'm sorry, I mistook you for Honorable Bonga.
We are good friends, so
that's why I confused the two of us. Any opposition to the adoption of this bill? Honorable Brettenbach?
We will take the matter to our caucus as is our habit.
She's not opposing. I think would allow them to take it, but in the House, there's no one who's opposing the bill. So the bill is adopted.
Okay. And then we have a report. Mr. Bassett, do you want to take us through the report? I will ask Honorable Pilar Majaki to just present the report that way.
Thank you,
Chairperson.
Because the report has been circulated, I'll take it as read. And want you to please know from members if there's anything that you want to change correct in the report. The report on the of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Constitutional Development on Criminal Matters Amendment Bill, dated 21 October 2015.
Because I'm generous and she doesn't want to present the report, I'll give you 5 minutes to go through it.
Oh, I can read it in 5 minutes.
No, I don't let them go through it. So. Yeah, I think I let them read it. Okay, we'll give you 5 minutes. And those who are in the street can have tea at the honorable members, on page paragraph 5, we are saying the committee therefore shall request the ministry to look into the proposal and to report to Parliament on the outcome of its findings within 6/12 months of this report. Would it not be safer to say 12 months, because then now we are going to Christmas and January we are on recess, and we may have problems by time frame. Honourable President.
12 months seems an inordinately long time to do this particular task, which is not an annual one. I would prefer to hear how far what is progressing in 6 months' time, and then it must be presented before the 12 months is up. But if we say 12 months, we're only going to hear about it in the 12th month, and then it's going to be another 18 months before we process it.
So you're proposing we say 6 to 12 months, within 6 to 12 months?
Well, certainly within 12 months.
How do we, in legal terms, put that?
Just like that, within 12 months.
Okay, so are we all happy with that proposal? I think Mr. Bassett?
Yeah, just another thing, more the technical nature, I think.
Before we talk about the other thing, Honorable Gretenbach wants an assurance that we are talking the same thing. I don't see anybody having a problem with their proposal. Within 12 months, yeah, okay. Yeah, so you can proceed. We are happy with this. You can proceed with your point.
Thank you, Chair. Just also in paragraph 5, on the third line, I think the word provide should be provides because it relates to infrastructure.
Happy? Honorable Mutapu.
Clarity and addition. The impact of this cable theft, I don't think it only affects South Africans, even any other person who will be in South Africa by then, let's say inhabitants, not only South Africans. Subject to correction.
Do we need really to spell out that? If we say South African, and anybody who is legally here should be entitled to the protection that we offer our citizens. No, the point is valid. We shouldn't address it informally. Let's hear our lawyers. Mr. Bassett, still eating. Honorable Majaki.
Well, I understand Honorable Mutapo's sentiment to say that in terms of the Freedom Charter, you're saying that South Africa belongs to everything, to live in it. So if you let's say consider what is actually admitting to.
So if you are visiting in the living
room? Living in South Africa. And the human rights of South Africa, immediately you get off the plane, we protect you. Or off the train. Once you step your foot in South Africa, as a human being, you are protected by the human rights of this beautiful democratic country, South Africa.
So let me now let the lawyers to present you in legal terms. Honorable, you are most welcome. Mr. Moses?
Maybe the Lord might have a better example, but can't one just say, such impact on the daily life of people in South Africa?
People in South Africa. So anyone who is inside the country.
That is correct.
Are we all happy?
Yes, we are.
So the lay opinion has been confirmed by high judicial authority. Yes. Okay. So where are we? the reports and the things that have been really adopted. Honorable Director. Honorable President, do you have something to say?
No, Mr. Chair, again, if I did, you would be the first to know.
Okay, no, that's fine. You know, all democratic rights must be exercised in the institution. Honorable member, with due regards to your democratic rights,
it doesn't seem this is the type of bill that we need to debate. Can we maybe think of just making declarations? Honorable Horn proposes, who opposes that? Honorable Pilani is seconding that.
So we will just, those who want to make
reservations will be allowed to do so, but they will not go into meeting. Thank you very much.
Let's have passes. Can you see that second?
Thank you, Chair. I assume that the documents
Doctor, don't think they walk out from the
Thank you, Chair. I accept that the A version of the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill and the B version have been made available. And I'll take it through on the same basis as Dr. Gwitter did. We refer to the A list. We are proposing.
Mrs. President, but are you still searching out something?
Chair, I'm not sure why you're paying so much attention to me, flattering as it is. I suspect it's for a different reason. However, if I needed to say something, I would draw your attention to the fact. Failing to draw your attention to that means that you can proceed. Thank you.
Actually, I was trying to protect Mr. Button against you, but I wanted to use the answer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Bassett is busy playing footsie with me under the table. He doesn't need to.
Okay, no, that's fine. Bassett is in footsie.
My legs aren't that long, Mr. Chair. A version. Of the A version, you'll see clause 6. We propose that it be rejected in line with our discussion yesterday. Clause 6 deals with the proposed amendment to the SIU Act. And then we jump to clause 15 of the bill that introduced. And clause 15 deals with the reporting obligations in terms of the Equal Protections Act. And we had discussions on the new proposal yesterday. These proposals were, new amendments were as a result of the discussions and concerns raised by civil society, and we propose that sub-clauses 3 and 4 of Section 65 of the Sexual Offences Act be amended as highlighted in the A version of the bill. So we reject clause 15 as it was introduced, and we propose a new clause as set out on pages 2 and 3 of the A list. Clause 17 deals with the South African Judicial Educational Institute, and as the Deputy Minister pointed out yesterday, we would like to add a few things in Section 1 of and we propose that clause 17, as it was originally introduced, be rejected and substituted with the proposed new clauses 16, 17, and 18 in the A list, as we discussed yesterday. Those clauses 16, 17, and 18 contain amendments to the South African Judicial Education Institute Act, substituting Office of Chief Justice with replacing the department with Office of Chief Justice and replacing Director General with Secretary General of the Office of the Chief Justice. Very technical. If I may move on then, Chair, that takes us to Clause 19. Clause 19, like Clause 15, deals with reporting responsibilities of ministers in terms of the Child Justice Act. The proposed amendments are exactly the same in wording as the ones that are contained in the Sexual Offences Act. So we propose that Clause 19, as it was introduced, be rejected and replaced by a new Clause 19, as reflected on pages 5 and 6, on page 5 in the A-list. And then Clause 23, that's the short title. And as a result of the deletion of Clause 6, we just had to renumber the clauses that are going to be put into operation by the President once the Act is approved by Parliament, also technical in nature. And then the long title, you see that on page 6 of the A-list, we want to omit the reference to the Special Investigating Units and Special Tribunals Act, and we've just taken that out of the long title. All these amendments have been incorporated into the B-version of the bill, which will be sent to the government printer if the committee approves it along those lines. So the objects memo, which is attached to the B-list, has been adapted accordingly, and the clauses have been renumbered, and put it in line with our discussion that we had with the committee had yesterday. Thank you.
Honourable members, I think their will has been done. Anyone who thinks that something is not exactly as what we agreed yesterday, Honourable Mutapo, if you say most, may suggest that there are one or two which are not. Okay. Okay. Honourable Mutapo, is happy anybody having a contrary view, Honourable Bonga? Honourable Bonga second that. So do we have anyone proposing the adoption of this bill? Honorable Bonga proposes the adoption. Honorable Majakian second. Any Honorable President?
Again, we'll take the message
out of focus. That's noted. Thank you very much. So the bill has been unanimously adopted. Yeah, that's Andy Hart. That is too halal. Same problem. Yeah, wat woord heeft hij gebruikt, meneer? Meneer Bonga, wat heeft hij gebruikt?
Van de apartheid.
Ja. Ja, is dat in die hand? Symbolisch. Is dat symbolische woord?
Ja, voor mij is het iets meer voor haar woord.
Goed, wij danken, dames en heren. We have adopted the bill unanimously. and now we will present the reports. The report reads,
I want to just say that I come from a democratic political party, the ANC. When they give me the responsibility to sit in a portfolio committee, they do believe that we will take decisions on their behalf. Thank you.
I'm happy that they believe it.
I think it's good that we remind one another where we come from without any skirmishes. So let's proceed. The report reads as follows. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services on the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, B2/2015, dated 21st October 2015. The Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services, the committee, having considered the Judicial Matters Amendment Bill, B2/2015, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it and classified by the Joint Taking Mechanism, JATM, as a Section 75 bill, reports the bill with amendment B2A/2015, report to be considered. Anyone, Mr. Bassett? Except that we are saying constitutional development is destined. Yeah, I will correct that. Any proposal for the adoption of this report? Honorable Bonga, Honorable Pumulan, so the report has been duly adopted. Honorable members, thank you very much for your contributions. Honorable On, you want to say something?
No, I just want to again propose that we do not debate, but rather only give opportunity for declarations in the House.
That's the proposal. Second, Honorable Nanga, second that. So, we got an indication that Advocate Hank was going to present on the regulator. He's arriving this morning. He should be here anytime. So we want to suggest that you have a 10-minute break to await his arrival.
Is this an opportune moment to discuss the arrangement for tomorrow morning?
Yes, you just proposed it, and these democratic people from other parties will agree with you.
Well, as you know, Thursday mornings are reserved for caucus. So, it's difficult to get the sitting tomorrow,
maybe. We remember the meeting mandated Mr. Bonani to look into that. Can I ask him to give us a report?
The proposal is that we meet at half past eight tomorrow morning. So we can look at the report from half past eight to around about maybe quarter to ten, and the members will be free to go to the caucus.
Our caucus starts at 9:30. Plus, I don't see the need for urgency tomorrow to discuss the report. The budget speech is lost in it.
Once today
is over, it's over. I don't see any urgency at all.
Okay. Well, we should be able to do it within an hour. So let's start at half past eight and then we'll be done.
Okay. Can't deny that we need to do it in less than an hour because at 9:30 we need to be at our caucus. So we're leaving at 9:20.
That is possible because in this committee we really don't fight over trivialities. So we should be able to do it.
Now we are still in time with your tea break, 5 to 10 minutes.
Kate Hank is suffering from jet lag. So can we break for 5 minutes so that he can be done?
Because you've been unfinished to them.
Oh, He was painting. He was just surprised of the reaction. I'm still going to ask permission from my community. And then he goes like, oh, I'll move.
And I
always
because
he's shocked.
And we do it
in surprise.
But it's not unfriendly to any South African unless they are out of work.
Yeah.
But all the rolling houses are under the news.
But my friends are doing so. They don't have organization, they keep on the mission. They take it to a brain that is so famous. Mm. And they believe in the brain. And they will allow you to make certain decisions.
Yeah.
As long as they are in line with what is the truth.
Yeah.
I'm happy to thank
the like when they send you the investor
picture.
Yes.
Exactly.
They allow you to take decisions. They really need to decide to run away.
But just remember that.
For the committee, and what I would like to do is, if I understand our brief correctly, we need to give you an indication what the functions of the information regulator are in order for you to be able to interview your candidates in a proper manner with a view to recommending to the president candidates to be appointed. Am I correct in saying that, Chair?
Honourable members, including those who are not listening. Is this our common understanding? Yes, members understand that to be the brief. May you then proceed and
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In that case then, Mr. Chair, I'm not going to go through the slides line for line, but I would rather prefer speaking to you, providing you with the necessary background information, and then possibly we can look at the functions of the information regulator, the implementation of the Act, and hopefully then you will have a better understanding of the caliber of the candidates you would like to nominate to the President. On the second page of our PowerPoint presentation, I just give a brief outline of the presentation. I'll give you a brief introduction. Then I will briefly refer to the implementation of certain provisions of the Act. Then I'll take you through the establishment of the information regulator. Then the important aspect then, of course, is the functions of the information regulator. And then 5 and 6, especially point 5, I would like to maybe just address you on the implementation of the remaining provisions of the DPI Act. Page 3, Mr. Chair, in 1999, the Open Democracy Bill was introduced into Parliament. That was subject to a statutory deadline, if I remember correctly, February 2000, the legislation had to be enacted. In that bill, there were three important components: the promotion of access to information aspects, and then also a chapter dealing with whistleblowers, and then a few provisions dealing with the processing of personal information. Important to note at this stage, Mr. Chair, is that the committee, among other things, decided to take out the chapter dealing with whistleblowers and promoted a separate piece of legislation, namely the Protective Disclosures Act. Insofar as data protection is concerned, or processing of personal information, the parliamentary report noted at that stage that it was noted in other jurisdictions there was separate legislation dealing with the processing of personal information, and the request was by Parliament that aspect be investigated, and that is where I refer on number 2 on page 3 to the South African Law Reform Commission, who then conducted the investigation. The Protection of Personal Information Bill was introduced into Parliament in 2009 and eventually enacted as Act number 4 of 2013. On page 4, Mr. Chair, I would like to briefly refer you to where we are actually now at this stage. Section 1 and Part A of Chapter 5. Part A of Chapter 5 deals with the establishment of the information regulator, and then Sections 112 and 113, which deals with the regulations and the procedure for regulations, were implemented on the 11th of April. Only those provisions were implemented in April 2014 to ensure that the process for the appointment of the members, among others, and then of course the eventual establishment of the information regulator, could proceed. Section 46 of the Act required of the Minister to consult with the Minister of Finance in order to determine the remuneration of the members of the information regulator. At the conclusion of that consultation process, the Minister advised the Speaker of the National Assembly that the parliamentary process can proceed, and that is exactly where we are now. The Act requires that the National Assembly must recommend candidates to the President for appointment as members of the information regulator. The last two bullets, Mr. Chair, or the second last bullet, and this is one of the aspects that I would go into in a bit more detail possibly later, but the members of the information regulator consist of a chairperson and then four ordinary members, of whom at least two ordinary members must be appointed on a full-time basis. The remaining two can be appointed on a full-time or on a part-time basis. The last bullet is the process that you are working towards now, Mr. Chair, is to make recommendations to the President. On page 5, Mr. Chair, just to give you a quick indication of the establishment of the information regulator, what the information regulator will be, is the information regulator in terms of Section 39 of the Act is a juristic person which is independent and subject to the Constitution and the law. It must be impartial and perform its functions and exercise its power without fear, favour or prejudice. The chairperson must perform his or her duties in accordance with the Protection of Personal Information Act as well as the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Now, just to take you quickly back to 1999, Mr. Chair, Parliament at that stage realised that the ideal would be to establish an what was called at that stage still an information commissioner who would take charge of the processing of personal information as well as access to information, because the two components run hand in hand. But at that stage, not enough was done to physically enact for the establishment of an information commissioner. The request was that that should also be investigated. That formed part of the South African Law Reform Commission investigation. But Parliament was faced with a slight dilemma. The solution to that dilemma was to assign additional functions to the South African Human Rights Commission in order to take charge of or to monitor the implementation of the Promotion of Access to Information Act. That was a temporary measure clearly reflected in the Promotion of Access to Information Act. Now that we have the information regulator, the regulator will then take responsibility for both pieces of legislation. The third last, or the second last bullet, Mr. Chair, is very important, especially with a view to the implementation of the remaining provisions of the Act. The information regulator, in terms of Section 47 of the Act, must establish its own administration by appointing a chief executive officer and such other members of staff as may be necessary. And then we could also then possibly just note the last bullet as well, that funds of the information regulator will consist of such sums of money that Parliament appropriates annually. Mr. Chair, I'm going to actually just quickly interrupt the flow, because I think we should note the issue around the implementation of the Act early during the presentation. I've explained to you the reason that or why we have implemented those provisions which are now in fact operational is to pave the way for the information regulator to be appointed and the staff of the information regulator, or the establishment of the information regulator, to be concluded or to be proceeded with. All the remaining provisions of the Act, including the amendments to the Promotion of Access to Information Act, which are reflected in the schedule to the Act, all those provisions create certain responsibilities and rights. The information regulator is extremely important in the enforcement of rights. So that is primarily the reason why we cannot implement the remaining provisions of the Act at this stage. As soon as you create those rights, I want to enforce my rights. And since the information regulator plays an extremely important role in the enforcement of my rights, I can only, or the government will only be in a position to implement the remaining provisions of the Act once the information regulator has reached a stage of operational readiness. I would just like to mention that at this stage, Mr. Chair. If we look at the functions of the information regulator briefly, very briefly summarized on pages 6, 7 and 8, and I'm just going to touch on that, Mr. Chair, because we do have the advantage of the legislation in front of us. Section 40 of the Act, among others, provides that the information regulator must monitor and enforce compliance by public and private bodies, apologies for the leaving out the word bodies, with the provisions of the PPI Act, and then exercise the powers conferred upon the information regulator relating to the access of information as regulated in terms of FOIA. So immediately, Mr. Chair, we see that there are two components: protection of personal information and promotion of access to information. Now that is very important, and I maybe should have mentioned that to you, but as we flow, I will remind myself of things to mention to you. Those two components are very important when we look at the establishment or the appointment of the members of the regulator. Apart from the chairperson, we have four ordinary members. The Act requires that one member, who will be appointed on a full-time basis, must take charge of promotion of access to information. The other member, ordinary member, to be appointed on a full-time basis, will take charge of the protection of personal information. The two remaining members who may be appointed on either a full-time or a part-time basis can be assigned whatever, either both PPI and FOIA or FOIA and PPI separately. So those are the things that one, and as soon as you start thinking about the qualities or the qualifications of your members, then one would immediately see that if you start looking at the ordinary members, that you will have to have a person who might be versed in promotion of access to information, at least one, and then of course another member knowledgeable about the protection of personal information. Back to the functions of the regulator then. This is where we get an idea of the tremendous amount of work that this regulator will have to do, and then naturally it will impact on the size of the office. And I'm just going to highlight them quickly to you, Mr. Chair. Where we get to exemptions, Chapter 4 of the Act is a very important chapter, and it's going to be a very technical aspect of the work of the regulator, because the regulator will be empowered to grant exemptions from complying with certain conditions for the lawful processing of personal information in appropriate circumstances. So that will be very technical work. By the way, one of the members of the regulator, at least one of them, must be a person who is legally qualified and has a legal experience. As far as prior authorization is concerned, it's also going to be a technical aspect of the regulator's work, and that is where responsible parties wish to process certain types or categories of personal information. They will have to approach the regulator to receive prior authorization to do so. Codes of conduct reflected in Chapter 7 of the Act is a very important chapter, and it's also going to require a technical approach by the regulator. Codes of conduct will be issued for different sectors, either on the initiative of the regulator itself, or then on application by a specific sector. In short, it will amount to the fact that the information regulator will be empowered to issue codes of conduct to guide a certain sector, let's say for example the banking industry or the motor industry, to guide them as to how to apply the conditions for the lawful processing of personal information in their respective sectors. On page 7, which is a very important chapter, Chapter 10 of the PPI Act, which then deals with the enforcement mechanism. Chapter 10 provides that complaints may be lodged by data subjects to the regulator regarding any interference with the protection of their personal information. And then the chapter empowers the regulator to investigate the matter and then eventually come up with a solution, possibly in the form then of an enforcement notice, which will require of a responsible party to act in a certain manner or to refrain to act in a certain manner. Non-compliance with an enforcement mechanism will eventually amount to a criminal transgression. The information regulator is also empowered to impose administrative fines in certain circumstances. And then a very important aspect, which I think is extremely important, not necessarily for the appointment of the members, but something that the committee could consider asking the candidates, is the whole issue around regulations. The bulk of the regulations will be promulgated by the information regulator. The minister only has two responsibilities as far as regulations are concerned. He is, first of all, if it is necessary, to prepare regulations with a view to the establishment of the information regulator, and then also with regard to fees to be imposed in terms of the Act. The whole idea why the information regulator was granted the bulk of the regulations was that Parliament felt that they should try and establish an independent as possible body with regard to the application or the implementation of these two pieces of legislation. Now, Mr. Chair, what one naturally think of if you refer to the regulations, and I've quoted a few for you, the information regulator may make regulations, among others, with regard to the manner in terms of which a data subject may object to the processing of personal information, the processing of health information by certain responsibilities, the manner in form in terms of which a complaint must be submitted, extremely important, the regulator acting as conciliator in relation to any interference with the protection of personal information, and then also very important, the settlement of complaints. Now, what makes this very crucial is, if the regulator is established, the regulator must take one thing into consideration, and that is something that they will most probably have to start working on very soon after appointment, and that is to work towards getting a proper set of regulations done. Because even if the regulator is established and we haven't got the regulations, then we will still not be able to implement the remaining provisions of the Act. Usually what happens is you establish your office and then you start looking at preparing regulations, and then you might find yourself that you have lost time in the process. The Chief Executive Officer is also a very important aspect of the whole issue around implementation and the appointment of the members. I think it might be advisable for the members to first look at getting a Chief Executive Officer as quickly as possible, because then you can start running your financial books and your statements and the like. So, and of course, if I may say so, I think that the Chief Executive Officer will probably be the foot soldier of the information regulator. That person will also be in charge of all the personnel appointed in the regulator. Then on page 9, we briefly refer to Promotion of Access to Information Act, to indicate to you that the information regulator will also play a very important part there. And those amendments to PAHIA will also have to be kept back until the information regulator has reached a stage of operational readiness. Now, what I have emphasized a few times now already, Mr. Chair, is then reflected on page 10 of our presentation. And then just to give you a general idea of the importance and of the information regulator and the impact on global society, section 40 gives you a very good idea of all the different functions that the information regulator will have to be have to perform, among others by providing education to promote an understanding and acceptance of the promotion the Protection of Personal Information Act, undertaking educational programs and giving advice to data subjects in the exercise of their rights, monitoring and enforcing compliance by public and private bodies with the provisions of the Act, consulting with interested parties by acting as a mediator between opposing parties, handling complaints, and then conducting research and to report to Parliament from time to time on the desirability of the acceptance by South Africa of any international instrument relating to the protection of personal information of a data subject, and then also facilitating cross-border cooperation. Mr. Chair, I think what I could mention to the committee is, even though the information regulator will have extensive powers to enforce the legislation, I personally think the emphasis of the work of the information regulator in the beginning will be to promote and market the legislation, and especially promote an understanding among data subjects of their rights, and then also among responsible parties to emphasize the need and the importance for them to comply with this Act. It is unfortunate that we called it the Protection of Personal Information Act, because strictly speaking, one could have given a different short title to the Act, because this Act aims to bring about a balance between protecting one's personal information and promoting or ensuring access to information, and then also the free flow of information. Chair, I think maybe I should pause there and then possibly receive some questions.
Thank you very much for a comprehensive and well-structured presentation. I think it has empowered all of us. But before I open the floor, I just want to play a devil's advocate. When you say the regulator will have the power to draft regulations to ensure his or her independence, but the regulator, are these regulations not going to be presented to Parliament for approval? And if not, why not? And if so, how will the regulator be able to be accountable to Parliament? And that independence really means independent from the democratically elected people of South Africa, because the final guarantor of the democracy is the House. What is this independence of the regulator needed for? Isn't it better that everybody be subject to the House, which represented all the people of South Africa, other than an individual? How do we keep the abuse of those powers by the individual?
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, maybe I stated it a bit unclear. First of all, the regulator won't be empowered to draft regulations in order to ensure his own independence. The idea of Parliament was to work towards a regulator who would function separately from the executive, as a regulator who would then be empowered to monitor the implementation of the Act. Insofar as the physical drafting and promulgation of regulations are concerned, Section 113 provides an extensive procedure for making such regulations. And if I quickly could just quote for you, the regulator, before making or amending any regulations, must publish a notice in the Gazette setting out the draft regulations. So the procedure, even for the consultation process, is prescribed. And then the requirement is also there to submit the regulations to Parliament. The regulator will report to Parliament, and it is required of the regulator in terms of Section 40, if I remember correctly, regarding any matter dealing with its operations, and then of course especially advising Parliament.
But when the regulator
goes to Parliament, Parliament won't be able to put questions to the regulator, because the regulator is not a member of Parliament.
Chair, I must admit, and possibly, I didn't expect the question on the regulations. If I could just quickly have a read through here. If you would just allow me a minute, please. I just want to check something.
No, don't worry.
You have done your job. I think let's leave it to the members to debate. Maybe they agree with you, not with my reservation. But the thing is the accountability to Parliament must be the point of departure. And now the minister introduces the regulations to Parliament. The minister is accountable to Parliament, and Parliament can question that and change, substitute his provisions with his own provisions, and Parliament represents the people. But if an individual then is given those powers, and if he's out of order, you can't call him to order, they will say you are interfering with his independence. And then it means the powers of the people are then taken away and given to an individual who can run amok with those powers. But let me leave it to the honorable members to deal with. Honorable Gomez.
Thanks, Chair. I apologize, I need a quorum in my other committee. I'll leave shortly. I think Chair, we just need to be educated around this regulator. I think we generally need more education, because we have also a broader discussion around issues of the Chapter 9. Institutions and so on, the rationalization thereof and so on, but from where I'm sitting, we're creating another body. We're creating another body almost similar to the debate around the Chapter 9 institution. And everything, the way it's crafted here, is like it is taking that particular form, although it's not necessarily the same, but the form and content seem to be almost the same as that one. So I would appreciate if we are properly educated around this, so that we can be able to advise Parliament and other stakeholders around the issues relating to the regulation. But I also do share your sentiments, Chair, that the issues around the independence and so on, because issues of personal information are also very sensitive issues. How we're able to manage that individual, how we regulate the individual himself. To imagine when personal information of people is being abused or something. So I think something is a missing link, Chair, that I think will be filled up by us having to get a proper workshop around the act itself. Thanks.
You know,
I think that it would be better for a democratic parliament to interfere with the dignity
of the individual, because that parliament action are also subject to scrutiny by the courts, which means there's more protection to the individual other than get a single person to have ultimate authority over the fundamental rights of citizens. And when things go wrong, then we have other running battles with an individual. I don't know, Honorable Nguyen.
I just wanted to find out from you, thinking that when you're saying the government is a juristic sentence, and
he's not very far from me. I'm sorry to him. I just wanted to check on the question of the meaning of is by independent judges mean it is a juristic person, and is it also a parastatal type of a jurisdiction, or is it standalone and answerable to ask the parliament? And if so, can you explain that part?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, first of all, I think it is important if we look at the part A of Chapter 5 dealing with the establishment of the information regulator, we must first of all note that it is not an individual who will be in charge of the regulator. It is going to be a body of 5 members who will be charged with taking, if I may call it, executive decisions or managerial decisions relating to the work of the information regulator. We have worked extensively on, for example, comparing this body to the broadcasting authority. That was a model that we looked at extensively. So first of all, it will be a jurisdiction, a juristic person, but in terms of the definition of the Act itself, it's a public body. And then, of course, will be subject to funding by Parliament, funds approved by Parliament. So there must also then be annual reporting to Parliament. And I can really bore you with the details, Chair, but the provisions are clear to the extent that the IT2L, the information regulator, as a juristic person, will be able to run amok in this sector of legislation. The primary concern of the regulator will be to promote compliance with the legislation by public and private bodies. The interesting thing I could possibly mention to you, Mr. Chair, when there were consultation processes, even after the bill was introduced into Parliament, the knee-jerk reaction of some institutions was always to try and persuade one why they shouldn't comply with this legislation. But then the answer, the standard answer that they've given them, was on 2 levels. The first one was, you simply ask them, do you comply with promotion of access to information? Now that's just the second component, actually, of that. Now if you say you comply and you are subject to the Promotion of Access to Information Act, what would be the basis of your argument to say that you shouldn't comply with and be subject to the Protection of Personal Information? And then, of course, Jeff, this act actually promotes insofar as the conditions for the lawful process of personal information is concerned, it has been called in some quarters as good business practice. Chairs, the whole of Europe, I think I stand corrected, but I think 9 African countries have already enacted promotion or data and privacy legislation, as it is called in some countries. The African Union is now working on a convention in order to get the other African countries to join in and promote similar legislation. In fact, the protection of personal information is an aspect that has been regulated in Europe actually just when computers started coming up, where it was very easy to manipulate personal information.
How urgent is this?
It's extremely urgent, Mr. Chair. Well, if I say extremely urgent, the bill was introduced in 2009 and what was enacted in 2014, but it is because it is a complex piece of legislation and it took
over. Are you the one who proposed the workshop?
Yes, I'm the one. I think we need some education because from where I'm sitting, the mandate of the regulator from presentation is like they are just too general. So if we to create a big institution with 5 bodies, with a CEO, with staff, just we have to look at it with the thinking of the rationalization of Chapter 9 institutions, because the fifth parliament is mandated here to not only to implement things that came from other parliaments, but also to deal with the rationalizing and radically transforming some of those legislations that are there in a manner that they're able to fit the objectives of what we want to build and the kind of society we want to create. So maybe from where I'm sitting, that's why I suggest that maybe we must have a workshop. It would be taken through, get the real understanding, and also check other countries, what's happening in there. Is it there in Namibia, and how is it operating? And again, if we just get the regulator, what are the financial implications given the state of the fiscal in the country currently? And a lot of consideration from where I'm sitting. So I think
the problem that we are at a stage where we have to interview candidates for the position.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if there are contentious issues, we can actually try to push forward a process that the committee is not sure of. If there are contentious issues, I think we should actually then deal with those contentious issues post a bit in terms of interviewing candidates. Look at what we are concerned about. Honorable Bongo is suggesting some form of a workshop, and indeed this legislation was not passed by this committee. It was passed in the previous parliament, fourth parliament. The committee needs to be put abreast on information around the intention of coming up with legislation of this nature. One thing that should actually also maybe be brought forward is information relating to the kind of treaties that Brussels has set, European Union has set. South Africa should actually have, you'll correct me, Honorable Heng, to say that South Africa should actually have legislation of this nature in order for EU to be in the position to sign certain treaties with South Africa. So the workshop can actually also go deeper into matters of this nature, so that we then at the end of the day are quite informed as to whether this is what we need or not. We can look at what progress AU has actually made around the same matter. Our African states signing and developing legislation that is in line with those treaties, and what is the position of AU on this, that's what we can actually look at, just to make us comfortable with this process. And I like the manner in which you put the whole issue of independence forward. You know, sometimes out of good intention, you establish an institution, and we will say the institution must be independent to continue to participate in helping to protect the democracy of the constitution. But then you don't always get what you thought you were actually putting on the table. And those are some of the things that you need to be careful about. You know, and then you find that you will have an arrangement that is just about the individual above everyone else, including the people of South Africa in Parliament. Because everything must be approved by Parliament, because Parliament has got a mandate from the people of South Africa. We shouldn't find ourselves in a situation where you are actually establishing institutions that then take over the control without them having been mandated by the people of South Africa. The workshop, I think, is a good idea.
What would harm us or the process if we agree to that workshop and maybe a kind of a position paper on the desirability of this act and what has actually gave rise to the need for this, because this committee was not part of the passing of the act, were not part of the debate, and to follow the words of Honorable Bonga, I think we need to be educated on this matter, but also the fact that the real power resides in the people of South Africa, and this tendency of parceling out power to entities that at some point even refuse to account or want to account on their own terms is not good for this democracy. You know, for instance, this year we spent time in court and debating, fighting, and not doing what we were elected to do. So I don't think we should create similar situations for the future, unless we want to destroy the democracy. So what harm would it be done to the process if we say we want to have that workshop and even invite civil society organizations to participate in this, invite experts so that we move with the people at the same time? I'm putting the question.
Sorry, Chief, my apology. I thought you were asking your neighbor. Chief, first of all, if you want me to go through this piece of legislation properly with you, without the members reading the act beforehand, it will take me 3 days, 3 full days. Possibly 4 days to explain all the different components to you. The European aspect of the processing of personal information, the advantages that South Africa will gain from being able to indicate that we've got adequate protection for personal information, it enhances and it enables us to conquer.
I was thinking in terms of having a workshop, is that something doable? And by when can we have such a workshop to inform this this process, and whether that will not affect the actors that has gone out and the necessary process to return?
Chair, I'm not sure when your interview is set.
Let's hear the honourable members. Honourable Buster, do you want to come in?
Chair, members, remember Parliament has enacted legislation which needs to be implemented, but I hear the needs of this committee, and maybe the workshop that you're suggesting possible. So a decision on the way forward could be taken quickly so as not to interrupt the process that's underway at the moment. So I think if a workshop, if this committee feels that a workshop is necessary, and that's not my call to, I would like to suggest that that workshop takes place as quickly as possible.
As possible, like what? In 2 weeks' time?
Yeah, it must be as quick as possible. But this piece of legislation is too small that it can take 4 days. Very small.
What
is 4 days? I'm just looking at it. We need just 1 day workshop just to one the salient issues. We are in parliament. We are not going to write an exam on this. One to the comparison, the intention of the legislature at the time. What are the trends in the other part of the world? What are the issues that relate to, again, the issue of funding will come in this. I think it's one matter that the committee must be settled in terms of the structure of the executive, how much the chairperson is going to be paid, all those kinds of things must be sealed. Because you'll find that the other time we're checking the Chapter 9 institution, even their monies are not regulated. So this other one is earning this, that other one. And we have a close and a long debate in South Africa now in Parliament that how do we rationalize this Chapter 9? And so we can't rationalize. On the other hand, we are busy committing more.
You have made your point. Can we say first or second week of November we have the workshop? But I'll tell you why. Because the provisions which give power to the regulator to make regulations, we may have to amend that part. So that at that workshop we even finalize matters that needs to be revised and so on. Provided all that will not put us out of the country. And then now what does that mean? Would that affect the interviews? Or can we go on with the interviews? But look at that. Honorable Bruno's.
Yeah. I think the interviews should wait. We should extend time on the others. And customs. I think it is very, very important that before we interview, we know what we're talking about.
Would there be no adverse consequences if we assume that?
No, I think what is likely to happen is that if we go along the shows, we might not find that the process might have protected every after. In terms of the advertising already, actually the call for nomination has already closed, so there's only for us to extend. We have to see this already.
Aspire? Oh. Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. You see, if we want a particular type of effect based on what we would have discussed, what the needs are, we may have to react to that. Because maybe the people, what criteria did we use, for example, in asking for people in the advert?
Premature to deal with that because we have not even looked at what we have. I think for now, would we agree that we need the workshop, and the workshop may indicate other areas where we may have to amend the act, and then if it means we do this early next year, that shouldn't matter.
but we can't be a parliament that does things through trial and error. Mr. Bassett?
Yes, sir. I hear what the honourable members are saying. To use Mr. Bongo's words, the members want to be educated. If that's what the committee feels is necessary before the interviews are held, then, as I said earlier, I think the workshop might be appropriate, but the workshop should be held as soon as possible so that it does unduly interrupt the process going forward.
Okay, can we leave it to who organized the workshop? Is it the legislature ourselves? Can we say, look at the first or second week of November? But meanwhile, we need thorough preparations on behalf of all the seven departments. We really need the background to the legislation, comparative analysis study between ourselves, Africa, and Europe. And we really need to address this question of independence. What does it mean? Because we don't think there should be institutions that are independent from the people of South Africa. That's where the power resides, and we shouldn't tamper with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I wanted to say with the comparative analysis, it shouldn't just be Europe. With Europe, we wanted to have clarity around treaties that require South Africa to have the constitution. But it must be a global comparison to go beyond Europe so that we can know other parts of the world how they actually handle issues, whether they do have similar kinds of legislation.
Other jurisdictions that may have a similar thing. But don't go and write it, this is what.
Sorry, can you say?
Don't go and write it, this is about the whole world.
Yes, sir, I just wanted to mention that the answers to all those questions are actually reflected in the South African Law Reform Commission's report, which is nearly, I think, if I remember correctly, 655 pages. So I will try and condense that for you.
But you see, maybe this is the opportunity for the department. You know, we have all these universities with senior students. So try and get these students to work with you and pay them something. Maybe you can address the crisis that we have. Try to utilize the existing resources. This can be a special system. And maybe, I think in this parliament, as we need to utilize it. We sit here with so many universities, frustrated students. We should put it on our agenda sometime, that we have to do it. It will really be a part of the process. But thank you very much for applying your mind to this. The financial institutions. And also the point that was Honorable Bonga is making, that we look at the desirability of this structure in relation to the other that we want to issue. Thank you very much. You can see that you gave us real food for thought. And maybe some good piece of work. So, Christine, welcome. Thank you.
go through the DDR before tomorrow.
I do not have a question.